Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of NBA.
You ready? Let's do it.
We are back.
It's been a while since between drinks, I suppose, is the best way to say that.
Oh, we could have said it's been a long time. We shouldn't have left you.
We could have actually, that would have been real succinct and perfect. Hello, everyone. This is the Final Play Podcast. We are talking NBA. We're going to talk, obviously, final series, round one, hopefully round two, but it will just depends how long we waffle. So we might break it up into two parts for you.
Oh, I would lay money on that it'll be a two-parter.
Because we waffle.
There's plenty of waffle. These players have been These players have been. While I thought that the first round would be, good and entertaining, the series that I thought was going to be good and entertaining didn't really turn out that way. But I think the consensus was that everybody knew that the Golden State Sacramento series was going to be fun. I think some of the other first round series sort of turned out to be a little bit dire. And in saying that, some absolutes, like some shocks as well, especially in the Eastern Conference.
Well, that's exactly where I wanted to start, and probably the game that the series that I guess sort of shocked nearly everybody. I would assume that was the Milwaukee Bucks, the number one seed, going down to the number eight seed, Miami Heat, in 4-1.
Even the most staunch Miami fan and Milwaukee fan would have told you, this series is a wrap. You know, we just talked about it before, the way that Miami actually got to be the so-called eight seed after their little bit of a play-in debacle where they lose to Atlanta. Atlanta steals their spot. Goes to the seven seed, and then that they proceed to be down like 6 points with 4 minutes to go against Chicago at home in Miami, and end up getting themselves into winning that and getting themselves into the playoff as an eight seed, and basically having to take on the juggernaut that is the Bucks. But That's a series of injuries, I think. That series, some big injuries came out of that.
Well, first game, where the entire series was sort of decided, at least in my eyes. What Miami did win that first game, 130-117, but it was the Giannis going down in the first 10 minutes that it's interesting. Yeah, obviously that sort of spelled, I guess, looking at it, the way they were playing and the way they played through him sort of spelled that game. But what's interesting to me is Middleton had a big game, who's sort of just come back from injuries. Drew was, I thought, a little bit quiet, but we'll probably talk about this at the end of this series. But I'm just kind of shocked for how good this team is. I thought even without Giannis, they may have been able to pull at least this game out. And they needed to.
No, well, that's right.
Without Giannis.
Even without Giannis, like if you go by, metrics and the way that the teams have been, coming into the playoffs and everything, Middleton just sort of starting to find his feet after the injury. Role players that are playing fairly well with the Bucks. You would have thought that they should – look, if they go down in seven – even, I still think that would be a shock, but for them to just roll over, really, and Miami just, they toyed with them in a couple of their wins, especially this one. Like, you know, Miami just exploded, especially in that first game. You know, they've been a bottom five offense all year in just about every metric that you can fathom. And for them to explode with, you know, and the Bucks have been a good defensive team, have they not?
Well, I thought so. So that was the thing. I thought they were a very, very good defensive team. And if you look at this entire series, I don't know if you've looked at this score. This wasn't a defensive series. This was a hugely offensive series for both teams.
Absolutely. The Heat averaged 124 points per game in this series.
Yeah, that's insane. That is absolutely
insane. Just, it's crazy. And with you say that we talk about the Giannis injury, but you also can't forget the Tyler Hero injury as well. Broke his hand in that first game. Not as important as a former MVP of the league, but in the context of the Miami Heat style of play, he's absolutely critical coming off the bench.
We'll talk about him later. We will talk about him later because I need to know your thoughts on him. But anyway, there's something for me and him that doesn't click to what he's getting paid, to be completely honest. But
there's a couple on the Heat team in that regard. Duncan Robinson has been that as well.
Yeah, all right. Did you, like, I think you did say it anyway, but you didn't think this was going to, even with the Giannis injury, you thought this might go to seven, but it going in five games was obviously.
I could have absolutely seen this game go seven. I think that Milwaukee needed to show just a little bit more fight, a little bit more desperation, so they could give Giannis the most amount of time to be able to come back in this series. Look, you know, Milwaukee blow the doors off the Heat in the first half of game two. It was 81 points, I think, and they score 138. So, you know, there's just no stops being had there at all. And yeah, you know, Miami did the job, got the split in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
go back to Miami, and they blow the doors off the Bucks in that third game. Yeah, you know, no Giannis again. Oladipo goes down with a knee injury. His playoffs are done. Butler hurts his glute, and it's unbelievable how Miami, the way that they've been shooting at the moment, and they're getting the job done.
So they were, before this series in the regular season, speaking about how, like you, I think you did say, like how poor they were offensively. They were bottom in that, you know, that advanced metrics of the plus minus. They were bottom 10 coming into this in the entire league, Miami. That's how shocking to what they were doing. Look, we know what Jimmy Butler can do in the final season. We know what Jimmy Butler can do in general.
He's a bit of a mythical creature at the moment, especially since he's been with Miami.
No, but
like,
it's funny you say mythical. Playoff
Jimmy.
You say mythical creature, and like, look at the photo, because obviously they get all these photos done at the start of the before the season starts.
And him with his photo, ridiculous dreadlocks.
And he knew it too. It's like he was trolling that. It was so
that was a troll job from day one of the season.
That's and they don't take any new photos. That is the photo for the rest of the year. I think it's hilarious. Yeah. It doesn't look like him. It does not look like him at all.
He
is playoff Jimmy. He led their team.
He had 56 points in game four, a career high.
His stats at the end of this series were average, so 37.6 points per game, 6 rebounds, and nearly 5 assists, which is
he's the hero of this series. Like, you know, you go to game 5, and it's in Milwaukee, And that it is that absolutely batshit crazy end of regulation. Mm-hmm. Where how long was there? There was 5 seconds or whatever that was to go, 4 seconds to go. The lob in, I think it was from Gabe Vincent, and a nice dirty big shove by Butler to get himself free under the cup to sort of lob it up and in. And then Milwaukee still has a timeout.
And
they don't call it.
Yeah.
They run the inbound.
Yeah.
And then time runs out on them. It was insane.
Yeah, it was. Like that whole them not calling that timeout or Bud not calling that timeout kind of spelled the death knell to me.
Yeah, well, that's right. And funny, you should use that word death. Like, you know, that's...
Wow.
Yeah, as that's right, and it has come out in the media afterwards after this series about Bud dealing with the death of his brother.
Yeah,
and that's the undue pressure that's on coaches in this league that you can't grieve, you can't mourn. It's like, no, I have to be here, I have to show strength, I have to be with my team.
Yeah.
Rather than being with my family after the tragic death of his brother. And
yeah,
that just means that he's not with it. He wasn't really, I guess, 100% focused on the job. And that's, you know, that was a telltale sign. And then, yeah, for the game to end without, I guess, one of their key guys with their hands on the ball, and it was a Grayson Allen drive to the bucket. And, didn't get to Drew Holiday, didn't get to Middleton, it didn't get to Giannis. It was the ball ends, or the game ends with the ball in Grayson Allen's hands. Like, that's, I don't see how that can happen.
No. And look, they, Look, for me, not having Giannis in a red hot Miami series proved to be sort of pivotal. They did miss out on just his aggression, really. Like Portis, I will say for them bounce out, Portis was really good in this series for a losing series. Bobby Portis was very, very good in this series. And
they needed everybody, and that's. That's the disappointing part, I think, for this series. Ultimately, it has cost, and I think this is as rough a call as you can get as an organization to give Bud the ass.
Yeah.
That is as rough and as ruthless as an organization can get. Don't you think?
Do you mean the timing of it, or do you mean just because of?
Well, they could have just given him a leave of absence.
So that's what I'm asking. Are you saying it's rough because of the timing, or are you saying it's rough because of them getting bounced in this first round?
There's been a lot of criticism about Budenholzer with his time with Milwaukee since he come across from Atlanta. You know that there's been heaps of credit. You know, he wins a title with them, and everybody's like, wow, you know, he's been terrific. But the last 2 years, you know, that they've been a little underwhelming, and this year has been, you know, you could call it what it is. It's an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah,
this just can't happen. To, you know, look, injuries aside, you lose your best player, okay, but. You've got to have that. You've got two other stars on that team, two other former All-Stars, to be able to carry you in this series. Be composed. They've been there, done it before. Yeah. They've all won a championship together.
Yeah.
And I think they needed a little bit of control and a little bit of elevated desperation to be able to get. The only reason Giannis came back in Game 4. Was because they're down 2-1. I don't think he was ready to go.
No, I don't think so either.
And no, that, they needed him to come back. And I thought he was, he was quite underwhelming.
Yeah, I did too. But I think he was truly still injured. And I just didn't, I think he came back just for the sake of coming back. And that's how it sort of looked when he did play. Because there's a difference between the way, well, I'll just say it, how regular people play and then how someone like him as a superstar plays. And if he doesn't have that superstar touch, that it's not going to bode well for them. So
he makes it's like most superstars. He makes everybody better around him.
Before we move on, because we're 15 minutes. Yeah, we called that 15 minutes per team. Before we move on, we're doing good. What does their postseason look like? Or off-season is probably the best way. We don't have to spend too long on this, but we'll just sort of
obviously is to find a coach, and whether it's going to be an assistant that steps up, somebody in the realms. Look, Nick Nurse was fired from Toronto.
Correct.
He's out there. Like, you know, there's good coaching candidates out there. Like, I don't know where Frank Vogel is at the moment. Like, where did he disappear to?
He's out there as well. Do they, so that's the thing, do they need, because of the way that team's constructed, do they need a superstar coach, or, like you said, maybe a step-up one? I don't think so either. That's the thing.
I think it's a Wayne Bennett type situation. You need a man manager. Like, X's and O's are good. And most coaches are good at that, but I don't think you necessarily need that from your head coach.
That's why I think Nick Nurse, I don't see him. I think he's good for that team, because I treat how he could be for that team like how he was for Kawhi when he got Toronto to that, to the finals and the championship. It's kind of, to be honest, it's kind of exactly the same situation.
Yeah.
Like, Giannis and Kawhi, they're not really outspoken kind of guys at all. They're the superstars on the team. And all he had to do was manage the players around Kawhi and get them to a place. And he did with Pascal and that. And it's sort of the same. My concern with them is I don't think there's any trade in the offer for anybody. But do you run it back with Chris and Drew? Because obviously Giannis isn't going anywhere.
Middleton and Drew Holiday with, you know, a little bit extra mileage on the legs now.
Oh, that is a thing.
I think Drew's got, he's still have a couple of years on Middleton, and obviously you still need consistency, though. Look, they had a bit of a disrupted season. I think, you know, the injury to Middleton throughout the season still, you know, didn't really bode great for them, even though Milwaukee still won 58 games.
It's interesting. Chris is actually 31 and Drew's 32. Chris looks older.
He does.
He looks older, doesn't
but
he?
But Drew's been in the league a little bit more than what Middleton has, I think. So,
run it back. That's sort of my feeling as well. Run it back. I don't think they need to trade anybody, and they probably need. I think they need a healthy swingman somewhere, possibly off the bench, probably like a guard, maybe. I don't know.
There's nothing wrong with their starting lineup. I think a lot of teams have is bench depth.
A good guard role player, I think. I think a good, decent guard role player, personally. I don't know who. I'm just saying I think they need, like, that. Do they have enough shooting? Like, once Chris was gone,
and that's the part of it
shooter,
as well.
They don't have enough shooting.
No, and that's part of it as well. Yeah. Drew Holiday is one of the more streaky three-point shooters that you can get in the league. Obviously, we know what Middleton can do. Giannis hasn't really got a respectful three-pointer or jump shot at the moment. You got guys like Grayson Allen, Pat Connaughton, these type of players. Like I said, it's role players. It's guys that are going to be able to come in. Like, you want to talk about role players? The Miami Heat.
Yeah,
And they've got role players there. And, you know, as The Rock would say, they know their role. So
yeah,
and that's how the Heat are doing what they're doing without a genuine superstar.
They have really good two-way players, which is good.
Well, their role players are going to have to step up more than ever with Hero being gone for possibly 4 weeks, which is a long time in the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see how the Heat carry on in the next round. And how they take on, well, they take on the Knicks in the next round. Mm. So, you know, that's going to be imperative again. Like their role players are just going to have to continue on doing what they're doing. You know, the three big ones are Strus, Caleb Martin, and Gabe Vincent. They're your guys that have to pick up the slack.
Yeah, they do. So the next series was Boston beating Atlanta. It was 4-2. Hawks, I didn't think they were going to win this, but they came across in this series, at least for me, pretty spirited.
I honestly didn't think that Atlanta would be able to take 2 games off them. I genuinely thought this was going to be a sweep, or at least a gentleman's sweep. But, you know, Atlanta showed something, especially in game three, that they had a little bit of ticker. They had some punch off the bench, you know, in that game. The Celtics, you know, sort of really come out strong in that series in the first two games. Trae Young struggled. He's proven that he's a bit of a playoff struggler, even though in this series he averaged 29 points, and he did start to come alive towards the back end of this series, but unfortunately, too little, too late for Atlanta to make a dent in, you know, a very, very overwhelming Boston team, I think.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the same thing. I think, well, they pushed out to those first two games pretty easily. Boston, I think, okay, they're going to run away with this as an actual sweep. But then that sort of high-scoring affair in that game three, which is actually a fun sort of game three. I quite like that game, actually.
Three and four were both super high scoring.
Three and four. Yeah, they were. Yeah. No, they definitely were. I think, look, this is sort of treading on what their offseason is going to look like. But I think, I don't know about you, but it's quite... Did Quinn Snyder going there, was that... It wasn't really talked about that much, was it?
I don't think so.
Utah coach.
Yeah, so purely the fact that it's the Atlanta Hawks, which, you know, which kind of sucks because Atlanta is a big market. It's a big market town anyway. Like Atlanta is a large city in America. So, that didn't really help them. I think, you know, the mid-season switch, you know, they had to start, you know, they'd had Nate McMillan there for the last couple of years. You know, he gets let go. Quinn Snyder comes in. They sort of had to adjust, I guess, to his coaching style. I think that's a big part of it. Yeah, and that's a challenge to be able to do that. And, you know, even at the end of the season, to be, you know, at 500 at 41-41 is admirable. You made the playoffs. I think it's not a disastrous season. I still think that this year that they have proven, at least I think so anyway, that the backcourt combo of Murray and Trey, I don't think can be the future. I don't think that works either.
That's interesting. So I don't think that works either. I just want to touch on what you said about Quinn Snyder. The reason, it's not his coach team. I could pick out sort of certain players that were good in that team from the way Quinn Snyder plays, and I'm not talking about DeJounte Murray and Trae Young. In this series, they were pretty good, even though they went down losing series. DeAndre Hunter was really good.
Yeah.
He's a decent sort of two-way player. And so was Sadiq off the bench. That was a decent sort of trade pickup.
Good pickup.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
So they've got the bones there, but I agree. I don't like the backcourt of Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. But in reality, you don't give away all that draft capital to get DeJounte Murray to then trade him. If they're going to trade anyone, they're going to probably trade Trae. And I think Quinn will do that. If he needs to, if he can get something back that he wants, I think that I haven't thought about where he could go or what he could get back. I think you traded away all that draft cover to get DeJounte Murray. You might as well recoup some of that by getting, by trading away Trae Young. If he doesn't think this backcourt works, and I don't think so either, I completely agree with you.
I just don't see it. Look, and it could improve in the off season, and they come back next year, and it could be
possible.
They could be a lights out, but it means that somebody's got to change their style of play. And honestly, I can't see Trae Young doing that, and I wouldn't think that he would be wanting to take a back seat to somebody else on that team. That's his team.
Well, I don't understand that. It's just. DeJounte Murray is, at least comparable offensive player compared to Trae, but he's definitely a better defensive player compared to Trae. His defensive lapses are just insanely poor.
We've been saying that for years. It's him and James Harden that people sort of feast on. When it comes to sort of pick and roll defense and stuff like that, when it comes to those two players, it's a pretty simple game plan to go in there with that that style of play that they have, and it's if Trae can't improve somewhat, nobody's asking to be defensive player of the year, but he needs to show some sort of improvement. Defensively. Yeah, when it comes to being, I guess to being picked on, and that's what teams do. I will just get him in a mismatch, exactly. and that's it. It's go time.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Was there anything else in this series before we sort of move on to the next one?
No, look, I don't think so. I thought
pretty straightforward, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, I think it was in game four, I think it was, where they were under the they're under the pump towards the end of the game. Atlanta had lost, and DeJounte Murray had some talking about him, had some choice words for a referee, and sort of gave him, I think, a little bit of a bump, which was probably a little bit unwarranted. Get suspended for game five, and even Atlanta wins game five. Without him, which showed a little bit of ticker.
Trae Young hit that D3.
That's right. That's right. He was 4 foot behind the 3-point line. It was crazy.
Yeah. It's real deep. Yeah.
I thought Atlanta pushed Boston as far as what Atlanta could. The Celtics were obviously going to be, quite overwhelming. Yeah, they've got the now newly crowned sixth man of the year in Malcolm Brogdon. So, onwards and upwards for the Celtics, I think, as they move on, they'll have the 76ers, which I think will be a good next series.
Well, that is the next game we'll talk about. Probably won't take long with this one because most of it right itself. So the 76ers swept the Brooklyn Nets 4-0. Look, Brooklyn offensively was pretty poor in every game. There was only, except for just the first game, which they just hit 101. The rest of the game, rest of the series, they couldn't get over 100. So, look, it's pretty telling, for at least for me. Why? Because they've traded away, I guess their best assets, and now are rebuilding for the future again. And that's
they've traded away the best players. They have assets now, but they don't have the superstars.
Well, their very best. They traded away the very best assets. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I'm glad they held out and got Mikal Bridges in that Durant trade, because I do like Mikal Bridges.
Yeah,
and I think he could be maybe not the centerpiece, but he could be a good number two on that side. I don't know about
somebody had to step up in that series for Brooklyn, and it was him.
Well, but even going into the end of the year, they did win a few games to sort of keep that number six spot.
Yeah,
and
right.
It was on the back of him.
Their win total at 45 is probably a little bit misleading, especially how the season ended, trade wise and stuff like that. So it'll definitely be sort of a retooling for Brooklyn this off season. I thought Philadelphia didn't really have to get out of second gear. So that sort of helped them a little bit. You've seen
game four. They let that Joel didn't even play game four. It's just to put it in perspective of them not really getting out of that second gear. So
no, that's right. Yeah, they're Embiid.
Yeah.
Look, and their game plan I think was pretty solid. Brooklyn in trying to double team Embiid in the post and trying to sort of flush him out of there and force him out to the perimeter a little bit. But they've got too many guns, and we've seen the emergence now in Tyrese Maxey a couple of times this series, I think he's going to be sort of huge for them as the future goes along for Philadelphia. So there's not a whole lot really to sort of go on Philadelphia.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, Philadelphia flies on. Brooklyn needs to do some. They're going to be one of the busiest teams in the off season to sort of, I think, figure out what to do with this team, what direction to go in, and what to do with one Ben Simmons.
Yeah, look, I agree. It's hard to know, and probably would take too long to sort of go into what they're going to do in the offseason, because they're back to square one in a way.
And they have complementary pieces, and that's a very good start. And they've proven in the past that they can't attract the superstar.
Correct.
So
but you're right. That's exactly right. But what's funny is they seem to. This is now the second time, if you think about it, that they've got themselves in a situation when they. This is going back to when they traded all that stuff away. Jason Terry, Kevin Garnett, and
Paul Pierce. No, it was the fleece. It was the fleece job of the decade. What Boston got out of Brooklyn. For those pieces, like it was, fleece job of the decade, well, unbelievable.
One of those pieces was the high pick of Jason Tatum. So that's one thing they got out of that. If you think about it, they did. So then obviously, then they didn't work out. They traded all them away, and they've kind of done the same thing again. That's what I mean. I just hope they don't get themselves into this. Which he kind of did with this. He kind of pulled, not a pantser, but he pulled the trigger and said, well, if he doesn't want to be here, that's it. I'm sick of this. And traded Durant away once Harden left and once who I've tried to lost it now. Who else got, who was traded away?
Harden. Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Irving. So hopefully they don't get themselves into that situation. The situation I feel like they're getting themselves into is, and this is really up to Joe Noah, is that whoever the one superstar is, that you, they shouldn't dictate who goes to there. You should, you can have a say. Yes, have a say, because you are, you know, you want a superstar to be happy and everything like that to attract. But they should have the final say of the players that go there.
All you got to do is go all the way back to the start of the season, and you know, the organization basically chose the players over Coach Steve Nash.
Yeah.
Which everybody, you know, they all played ducks and drakes about, oh, yes, no, no, we're absolutely behind, you know, Steve Nash 100%, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, it sort of comes out that they kind of weren't behind Steve Nash, and Kevin Durant sort of, you know, maybe without saying, had a little bit of part in his demise as the coach there. So,
of course he did. But yeah, they're retooling. We'll see how their season goes, and Philly moves on to play Boston. The last series in this Eastern Conference first round was the New York Knickerbockers beating the Cleveland Cavaliers in 4-1.
Hayden's Knicks.
Who'd you say?
I said Hayden's Knicks.
Nah, who cares about him? yeah, that's Hayden. Nah, not really. Rough. It was weird. I guess I wasn't shocked that the Knicks won, but I was shocked how well they won this series.
A very low scoring, I guess, affair for this whole series. Not one team both teams averaged under 100 points. I was quite excited for this series. I thought this was going to be possibly the best series of the Eastern Conference first round. And unfortunately, it disappointed a little bit, I think. Look, as you know, if you're a Knicks fan, terrific. Moving on to the second round, play the Heat. I definitely didn't think that you would be thinking that they would be playing Miami. I think that they would have been, you know, we're going to be playing the Bucks. So,
oh man!
So that's, you know, that's a positive. That's a positive for them. They'll be supremely confident going in against the Heat.
That's all their fans need. Their fans need something like that for them to blow that out of promotion. Knick fans will let it be known that how wonderful their side goes when they're going wonderful, and how terrible their side goes when they're terrible.
They're highly irrational either way.
But yeah, AKA, that's what Adam is.
I was genuinely disappointed, you know, in this. Mitchell, I don't think, you know, despite game one, what did he have? He had 38 points or something in the first game. And, you know, I thought that was the what they needed from him to sort of him to stamp his authority on this series. And the Knicks straight up steal game one in Cleveland. And it was just a total contrast, you know, in each game. Like, it was every team that lost just super struggled offensively. You know, in game two, the Knicks scored their lowest points total of the season, 90 points. In game three, the Cavs scored 79, which was the lowest score of the season by any team. So it was just whoever if there was offensive struggles, then it was near impossible for that team to fight their way back out of it.
And that's how, especially that game three in particular, and that's how it sort of come across is offensively. Both teams were sort of struggling, which is in a way was just kind of cool, because I don't know about you, as much as like buckets go down and the crowds go crazy, I do like seeing defensive sort of scrap heaps.
No, absolutely. And that's what cool. That's what the playoffs generally turn into. They generally sort of turn into slugfest. This is a yeah. You know, a more traditional playoff series where it is, you know, every possession is, you know, worth its weight in gold. It can be a defensive struggle throughout periods of the game. So, and that's probably, I think, the only positive, really. I think that come out of this series. I think for the Knicks, for them to be able to roll through, I wouldn't say easily. You know, you look at the result 4-1, you'd think that the Knicks sort of got it done easy, but they didn't. They didn't really. And for them to be, I guess, down their, one of their most important players in Julius Randle. He wasn't 100% this whole series. And then he rolled his ankle in game 5, that left ankle that gave him trouble towards mm-hmm. the end of the season. I think he missed 10 game or 8 games towards the end of the season. The Knicks had to fight through for them and still kept the momentum going. Jalen Brunson has probably been, I think, for me, the buy of the offseason, of the season.
I think for me that's without a doubt.
They don't go anywhere as far as this without him.
Yeah, as much as Julius doesn't want to know, it's kind of easily becoming Jalen Brunson's team, especially after this series. I thought so. Two things out of this series, I thought Jay Barrett was fairly okay in this series. It wasn't the best, but he wasn't the worst. Like, it was okay. I thought
inconsistency from RJ though. Like, it's you listen to commentary throughout the season. Like, have a look at their three best players on there. They're all lefties, and they all telegraph that they're going left.
It's
unbelievable that the team dynamic and the style of play that Thibodeau has got them playing, that you can have, three lefties like that don't really have a right hand.
I totally agree. There's nothing wrong with the left hander, firstly. No, but secondly,
speak for yourself.
Well, I am speaking for myself. So that sort of surprised me, but the biggest surprise for me out of this series was how poor the highly touted Evan Mobley was throughout this entire series.
I think he's had a disappointing season.
Season in general. Yeah, just look at I probably agree. I mean, most of these
sky's the limit. Sky was the limit for him. Really is.
It was supposed to be. That was like after last year, this year was supposed to be his step up year, so to speak. Look, he's still 21, so we're not looking to go all the way in him. But
it was him and Scotty Barnes last year were clearly the two best rookies.
But this series he only averaged 16-9. So, for a fairly dominant first year, and to be in the playoffs, 16-9 isn't, I don't think, that great personally.
That's not eye popping
for a center. No, not at all. Not for someone to stand out. Yes, I know Donovan Mitchell loves the ball and loves to shoot, but you can have two players that can do that. And
that's why I think Jared Allen is more of a complimentary player for that sort of style of play. He's Donovan Mitchell's new Rudy Gobert. Like, it's that he doesn't have to adapt his style of play that much compared to what he did, the way that he played in Utah. He's got that sort of that kind of big man who's a good rim runner. You don't have to run a whole lot of plays for him in the offense, yet he can still produce for you and is an unbelievable rebounder.
So the next move on, I think we've already said, I'll move on to play Miami. The Cavs, interesting offseason because they 51-31, they finished fourth. Very good season. So they did have a very good season.
Yeah, look, think back to the start good of the team. Year. They were red hot to start the year, Cleveland.
Yeah. Oh, they were. Everyone was talking up Cleveland as a team yeah, they were talking up them as a team that was going to disrupt the Milwaukee's and Boston's of the
your
world.
Phillies, yeah, that's right. And look, and finishing fourth is, like you said, it's not a disappointing season at all when you look at it as a whole. But, you know, to be able to, that sustainability of the way that they started the season, you know, whether they could have continued on that, obviously we don't know. But, yeah, it's I think there was a bit of a hype train sort of happening with Cleveland towards the start of the year. That quietened down a little bit. And I don't think anybody was really that surprised in, you know, this series only went five games. But I, you know, this to me, this really could have went either way. You know, that's to me, and that's where I think it's a little bit of an indictment on Donovan Mitchell more than what it is Evan Mobley. Like, Donovan Mitchell has to be the guy to just absolutely take over this series to be able to execute. Look, you know, he only averaged, what was it, 23 per game. So that, and, you know, in that's and his assists were up as well. So look, a lot of the offense does go through Donovan Mitchell, but you'd like for him to have help. But
I just, they're an interesting team in the postseason. Because it's, I think, look, Darius Garland was unhealthy during the year, and they had a little bit of health issues.
Donovan Mitchell. He was the guy that was fueling this hot start.
Yeah,
correct. It was Darius Garland.
Correct. So, and a lot of their players, like Evan, Darius, I think Jared's still young. But so what I'm getting at is I don't think they have to do anything in the offseason. I think their players just have to get older. They're going to get older, and just learn off sort of the experience, because they have a very good, let's say, fairly deep team. Like
if you were starting a team, you know, it's a good core to, you know, I think to start with, you know what I mean? Like, there's lots of positives there. If you can get, you know, Caris LeVert to be a bit more healthy, I think he could be a major contributor.
I agree. Yeah. Isaac Okoro, if he steps up in his second year. But yeah, like, they're fairly uniquely, I think, let's just sit on who we've got. We've got age on our side. Look, you know, like, and a little bit overachieved, and they'll want to then build on that, because obviously Donovan's in his prime years, so they'll...
No, that's right.
You know, you've got to sort of cash in. It's like everybody, when you're in your prime years, you've got to cash in when in the prime years, otherwise you're just wasting it. So
whether it's put together a different bench for them...
I think so, possibly.
I think that could be the only thing that you might be able to do as an off-season. So yeah, it's just, I guess, just sort of tinker. They don't need to tinker a whole lot with the starting lineup, but I think it's fairly formidable. And like you said, you know, they've got the young superstar there in Darius Garland, Mitchell, Allen. Like, yeah. it's they've got the building blocks.
Yeah, they've got the building blocks. So we'll move on to the Western side.
West side.
The West side. I guess let's just go in order. Let's keep it simple and keep going in order. So 1-8. So the Denver Nuggets took out the Minnesota Timberwolves in five games, 4-1. Were coasting for a fair while up until game four. Thought they were going to sort of take it away, but they did lose in that OT. Well, there's probably not much to say in this. Denver, red hot. They never look like getting troubled by Minnesota. Minnesota were okay, but kind of a put-together team in the end, if you sort of think after after that trade deadline.
After the Gobert trade.
the Gobert trade.
D'Lo gone as well.
Yes, I said I would say around that trade deadline. Yeah, I wouldn't even. I'm talking around there because D'Lo was gone. They picked up Mike Conley, who was, I thought, a very astute pickup personally, a very decent sort of pickup coming into the playoffs. Didn't do much in the playoffs, but the kind of guy you need in there, you know, when you've got the Anthony Edwards heads of the world and, well, not that he ended up playing, but Kat.
He did, but that, but yeah, in saying that, like, wow. that's you don't want, yeah, you don't want to go, oh, well, that this is the guy that the guy that they needed in this, the guy that they needed in this series was Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, please stand up. You can't, in that game two, he has 2 points in the first half. Like, you can't do that. It doesn't matter that he's going up against another good big man in Jokic. Like, you've got to be able to find ways to, because they've got, you know, essentially the two biggest, the biggest front court that's probably going around in the league with Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. But for some reason, Karl Anthony Towns thinks that he's 6'4" and not 6'11".
That is true,
loves the perimeter. He loves it. He lives out there. It's unbelievable.
He has a very nice 3-point shot, but he does not, for his size and arm length, he should be way more under the bucket than sitting out the perimeter. If I had his height, I'd be under the friggin' basket all the time. Say, give me the rock every single time.
That's the thing. he simply just can't average 18. Like, he's averaged the double-double. Like, he's a good rebounder. Realistically, you shouldn't be able to take too many offensive rebounds away, or, you know, you get many offensive rebounds against this team because you've got Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. You know, in this series, both of those two combined average 22 rebounds. So it's part of the game. But, you know, for a big man like that, he 45% shooting from the field. Like, that just can't happen. He's taking nearly 5 3-pointers a game.
That's
not to say that that's unacceptable, but because the league is the way that it is. But that was always going to be the perplexing part of that trade for Rudy Gobert, was how those two were going to coexist offensively.
Yeah.
Because you can't, unfortunately, even back in the day, you still couldn't crowd the paint.
No, that's right. But unfortunately, I guess he probably thought he might have to pay out the perimeter more. But unfortunately, I don't think we've talked about that trade so much, but without going into the details of the trade, but just then when Minnesota going all in to get Rudy Gobert.
Seemed a little odd.
Well, that's what I'm trying to work out. So I can't work out for me what they thought. This is not against Rudy Gobert, who I don't mind. But when you got someone like Towns there, I don't know.
This is a Minnesota front office deal.
Because I'll put it this way, with the team they had, so the Edwards and Towns, with the team they had, and you went all in like that, you know, off the top of your head, but a player, unless you've got one on top of your head, what position would you go for in that side instead of what they end up getting in Gobert?
You're mortgaging the future. Like, you've got to be, like, Karl Anthony Towns has got to play the center, and you'd either have to go after, you know, they had a point guard there for a while in Ricky Rubio, who was a good pass first point guard. That's the position I would have been going after.
I thought so.
As a point guard, to get those guys the ball, to be a distributor, because we know what Anthony Edwards does.
Well, you could space him out more if you had a proper ball distributor. Would have been perfect.
Yeah.
So
mortgage as much of the future as they did, it boggles the mind. It's pure insanity.
Well, I think so. This is the interesting thing. Just speaking of them on the off season now, because I guess that's where we're at with the end of this series. With what they gave away, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but what they gave away, going forward, I don't think they can keep these three.
No.
I think, because of what they've done, I think they have to trade Karl-Anthony Towns. I think they have to. I don't think they're going to trade Gobert, because in the back of their mind, they'll think we're going to recoup what we got.
That's their investment.
That's right. That's exactly right. Whereas Karl-Anthony Towns, you might be able to get, I wouldn't say a haul, but you're able to get something decent enough back. I think you'd be able, in
today's sort of trade market, I think you'd be able to get something good. It's either two.
Well, it's going to be good. I just don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah, either two things are going to happen. Yeah, like you said, that's scenario one, that they need a shake up, and you know, Karl-Anthony Towns is probably going to be that expendable asset, or they keep all these three. The success doesn't come, and Anthony Edwards wants out.
Well, that's going to say that, but that because is the biggest problem.
Yeah, what is a year? What's the year three for him? And you can see that he's got an ego the size of a house.
But okay, he does. But for me, that'll be next year. Is it next year? The year after? I think it's next year they can start negotiating. My priority next year is not Towns trading, is making sure Anthony Edwards signs your rookie max extension.
That's right.
Sign that rookie max extension, because if he doesn't, then you're in massive trouble.
Yeah, and that's where he sort of got the organization by the ball. And yeah, you want to talk about hot takes? Two guys in the league that are young guys that me, as you know, a basketball watcher and lover, two players' games I absolutely do not like at all. One is Anthony Edwards. I don't like the way that he plays, too much one-on-one, too much dribbling, too much shit. The other one's Ja Morant.
I was just about to say, it's the reckless abandonment of him.
And, you know, there's things going on with him that we can talk about, when we've got a little bit more time. But I just don't like that. I don't like that game. It's not nice to watch at all.
So I will say Anthony has pieces where it's erratic, but I think he, with the right coaching, I think he can tool himself a bit better. I don't mind Anthony Edwards. Ja Morant, that's exactly who I thought you were going to say. I don't think
I don't think he wants to be taught out of it.
I think he feels like this is his game, his go-to game. I mean,
the king of missed dunks on people, and everybody loses their shit every time he does it. And it's just like, but he didn't this is what we're classing as, you know, as big plays and entertainment now. Missed dunks, like. Do you know what I mean? Like that doesn't make any sense. You see basketball cards when he came out in his second year, and that dunk that he tried to do over Kevin Love in Cleveland, and it's like, yeah, but he missed the dunk. Like, what are we doing here? What are we rewarding with that? That's not a highlight. Half the league can jump over the top of people.
That's right. That's like, and put it in perspective. If that same thing happened in the dunk contest, and he missed, people would be saying, that was crap.
You'd be getting slayed.
But because it was over a player, had to be, but blow up and let's like make it a big thing. Yeah, no, I agree. But I think Anthony, I think he could be taught, you know, played with and molded with a little bit. And I think he could slightly change that game. Of erraticness, so I think
that would be with veteran coaching. I think not with what they've got there at the moment. I think they've got they've got Flip Saunders, young fellow there. So I just can't think of his first name.
Steve Nash could go there and coach. and tool him. Not to be more of a ball handler, but tool him enough.
You know what? He already is a ball handler. Trust me, he handles the ball plenty.
Well, that's why they need like you said, a point guard. Because he needs to be spaced better, Edwards. So Denver move on pretty convincingly. The next series, and they move on and they would play the Phoenix Suns. So the next series is, speaking of the Grizz, the Lakers and the Grizz, and the Lakers beat them 4-2.
Yeah, well, may as well move on to your boys and look, I guess, I don't know. Did a lot of people see this series coming?
I don't know, because
that Ryan Saunders isn't on the coaching staff anymore. It's Chris Finch who's the coach now of Minnesota. Okay. Just sort of clear that up.
I don't know because we don't need to get into Ja Morant stuff. I think there's plenty out there to go. Everyone knows what's going on there. But I'm wondering if that played a part in their downfall of this series, because he was still coming back from that technically. He had a few games under his belt. But I'm wondering if that did actually play a part in it. Because, you know, speaking of the ball running through it, the ball kind of runs through him, if you think about it, in a way.
Yeah, that's right. Look, he gets hurt in game one.
Yeah,
like,
he does.
Like, we talk about the reckless abandonment. Like, he gets hurt in game one. You simply just can't cost your team in that regard by not being available for the playoffs, for a style of play that he has. Like, and like you said, can that be? I think that's the kind of player that he absolutely wants to be. It's like, I want to be the next, you know, human highlight reel. I want to be Dominic Wilkins. I want to be Vince Carter. I want to be highlight after highlight after highlight.
Yeah.
And you know, unfortunately, how much winning did those guys do? Yeah, not as much as you would have thought.
No, that's exactly right. So the two things with them is they don't really have an adult on that squad, because Steven Adams has been out for.
Oh, he's the adult, but he's not the adult on the court. And look,
he hasn't been there for nearly half the year anyway as well.
No, that's right.
Which hasn't really helped them. But
him as, you know, the veteran on that team, you can still influence those guys from the bench, you know, on the team bus, on the plane. Like, do you know what I mean? As a veteran, you can still put your stamp on and influence, you know, those players, even when you're not on the court.
I think,
and they all should be 100% shit scared of him as well.
Oh, I think a lot of people are, but I think when it's on the court, it doesn't seem to translate, especially for one Dylan Brooks. It just doesn't translate.
And
Dylan Brooks is just doing Dylan Brooks things, and it's probably why they obviously end up losing this series. What I wanted to say about the Lakers, it's not so much, you know, two-horse Anthony Davis and LeBron James. It was Pelinka's trade deadline to get a Rui Hachimura, a Vanderbilt, D'Angelo Russell. Which one? Vanderbilt?
that's right.
D'Lo,
your boy
D'Lo. Well, that first game, 29 points for Rui, D'Lo. D'Angelo's not my boy. I don't like him. But Rui, I definitely do. I'll talk about Rui any day of the week. And then Austin Reaves as well. So he built that entire trade deadline and got those two a competence quad. He really did. Right. For as crap as it was at the start at the start of the season with 2-10. 2-10. and then they got to where they needed to. Yes, they had to get, they had to win the first game to get into the play-in, but then from there, yeah, they, the squad, because they had enough depth, got the job done in this entire series. Yeah,
that's once again for me, that this series comes down to a little bit of maturity, and like you said, you know, no adults in the room for Memphis, especially on the court. And like, just the game three, I think, is where game two was where sort of Dylan Brooks started to become maximum pest, especially against LeBron. And you know, and then it escalated in game three. Like, you know, Dylan Brooks is standing next to him, clapping and jawing in his ear. It's just like, good God, who the hell do you think you are? Who the hell do you think you are?
And basically said at the end of that, was after that game too, where he said, no, I don't.
Oh, he's old.
I don't want to talk about people that are 40.
Poke bears.
Yeah. So
just the most idiotic comments that you can make. in this type of, the last thing you want to do is poke the bear of LeBron. Like, it's
superstar. It doesn't have to be LeBron. I mean, he's the worst one to poke because he can flick a switch no matter how old he is. But it was any superstar, you didn't have to poke the bear. And you know, that was one of the many telling things of their series. I mean, that game six was just absolutely pitiful by then. I think I turned.
No,
it off.
That's right. They absolutely capitulated.
40-point blowout in that game six. It was insane, that game six.
Absolutely capitulated. Just a pure unadulterated destruction.
So they Lakers move on. They'll face who we'll talk about later. Or we can spoil it now, but we'll talk about it later. What do Memphis are weird because I don't like they're in a predicament. They've kind of already said that no way Dylan Brooks is coming back to this team.
No, I didn't see that one coming.
Not to be so vocal and upfront about it. No, I didn't expect that to come.
No. I think that's a little bit of leaked media. Surely they wouldn't have want those details to be out on Front Street so early, you know, after being bounced out of the playoffs. I think, you know, a bit of a, you know, like another team in the Western Conference, I think wasted their opportunity of a high seed. I think Sacramento wasted their chance as a high seed. You know, in this first round, and I think Memphis wasted their chance as a high seed to be where they were. You know, 50 plus wins again. You know, look, they had Ja Morant out for a little while. They've had Steven Adams gone for most of this season, and for them to still sort of be where they are, and maybe it's just me that they're a divisional rival for the Pelicans, but I find their team super annoying. And I messaged you throughout this series, and you know, so I will never ever want the Lakers to win anything, but I was absolutely glad, absolutely glad that they bounced Memphis the way that they did, especially in that game six. That's probably the most that I've ever smiled watching the purple and gold.
I guess the Grizz are weird in that what they do. They have to obviously sort out what the hell they're going to do with Ja Morant without going into it too much because, again, everybody knows. But he probably needs to stay off social media for one. And then secondly, what they're going to do with him long term. What are they going to do with him long term?
It was the thing too, you know, all the stuff that happened with him in the middle, you know, or, you know, towards the end of that season after the All-Star break, all the crap that happened with him in the Denver strip club and all that dumb shit that happened. That's right. Double gun. Like, what? It's just foolish. Just absolutely foolish. Like, I think this boy needs to have a real good look at the people that he hangs around.
And
The NBA tried to put a little bit of a band-aid on this and go, oh, hey, look, he's going to South Florida for a, you know, a bit of a retreat and a get to know me sort of thing. And, you know, he's down there for 5 days and he comes back and he goes, yep, I'm all good. And they tried to push him back into the spotlight again. And it's off court antics. And that's all ours, antics.
Yeah.
And
they're antics.
They're new age NBA player antics. Like me, as you know, the biggest Dennis Rodman fan that's going around, I know about players and antics. That's what he did. But he was the consummate professional on the court.
That is the difference.
And he commanded the respect of everybody on the court, and he was given that.
See, Morant, it just seems
so unbelievably immature. This is just me. I really think he needs to look at the circles that he's in and the people that he sort of has around him, because he seems to be easily influenced by people that he has to try and impress. Or you know, whether it's peer pressure, I don't know.
The difference between Ja Morant and Dennis Rodman is the off court stuff. It is the off court stuff, because on the court, I think Ja Morant is at least professional enough on the court. He doesn't go out and yes, he has an erratic game, but he still plays the way he plays. He doesn't antagonize people and everything like that. It's the off court stuff.
No, that's Dylan Brooks' job.
Correct. Dennis Rodman does what Dennis Rodman does, and everyone knows what he does. But he is not doing nothing out of the realms of what any other person does, and doesn't go out of his way. But the cameras follow him. Like he's up front. Yeah, right. I want to go to Vegas for the weekend or whatever, which is what again normal red blooded American males would do. That's something he enjoys and that's what he's doing. He's just going out, he's actually just having fun, technically having fun. The difference is with Morant, and it is the circle, because it's not so much, yes, their law is the bear to right arms, and he can definitely have a gun if he wants to have a gun. That is their constitute over there. But you do not have to go willy-nilly on social media, because kids, literal kids, are wearing these things every single day the week. And
he is a highly influential person on today's youth.
So if he's doing that on social media, then I'll go and get one, because I'm allowed to have one over there, and then I'll start doing that. And then it gets worse. Dennis Rodman never did that. I mean, it wasn't around then, yes, I get, but he never sought to do that kind of stuff online.
Couldn't imagine what he would have been like.
But the cameras followed him. He didn't. Put himself in the cameras and everything like that.
He did.
Well, not really. But they followed him. He didn't. He didn't.
Yeah, they followed. I think it was a bit. It was a bit of giving.
He probably needs to sort out his circle. They need an adult. They need a hardline coach is what they really need. It's what my feeling with that team. They need a hardline, won't take any crap coach. Yes, you are the superstar. Yes, you know, you are Memphis Grizzlies going forward, but you need to
start acting
kids look up to you, so you need to be our leader. You know, you shouldn't have someone you shouldn't have someone like Steven Adams, you know, I guess running the team because of his age. Just because Jar's what, 22, 23, doesn't mean he can't be a leader. They've got half decent pieces. I was always a big Jaren Jackson fan. He did get Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
And richly deserved. And I don't know what you feel, but I've always liked Desmond Bane's game. So they have the bones there. At least three bones. And they have the they have pieces to get a player too. They were so close to getting what's his face from the Raptors that everybody was trying to get, but they had the assets.
Put either Pascal Siakam or Fred VanVleet.
No. Who's
that? Oh, OGR. Sorry, OG Anunoby.
Yes. And so they still have the assets to go and get a player. They just need to grow up. That's pretty much simple. Grow up.
No, that's right.
So moving on, we've got two more games. I think we're going to have to do a two-parter looking at where we are right now. Okay, we'll keep going. But the Sactown, Sacramento Kings going up to the Golden State Warriors. This is probably the most funnest series out of the round one for me. Probably for a lot of people, but not because it went seven games, just because the back and forth of the nature and the Kings sort of flexing a little bit. And then obviously at the end, Golden State really flexing their credentials and muscles and winning this series 4-3.
Well, yeah, and we have the Coach of the Year in Mike Brown, which I think, yeah, like you said, with Triple J being crowned the Defensive Player of the Year, I think Mike Brown richly deserved the Coach of the Year job with what he did, with this Sacramento side. To start off, Sacramento made the decision to go in the direction of De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton. One got to go. And everybody irked up about it. Have a look at this deal. They got Sabonis in the deal. Halliburton goes to Indiana. This is one of those unbelievable win-win trades. Sabonis seemed to complement this team so well. Efficient, great rebounder. Has got a respectable three-point shot on him. Can beat you down low in the post. Like he's very physical down low. The Warriors lack size. They've got Kevon Looney there. Draymond Green is obviously not the biggest of bigs. But what he can do defensively, he can sort of take you out of your rhythm. He likes the bit of the heavy body contact as well. So I just wanted to start there, and then Mike Brown, coming in and doing what he's done with this squad. 48 wins. First time in the playoffs in how long? And the funniest thing is Mike Brown has he transcended this team to being a laughing stock for the past decade plus. For them to be, I think if they can continue on like this, to be formidable in the West.
Just on that trade, I think people were going on, going in on Sacramento and like blah blah blah. Shouldn't go away Tyrese. And yes, I know Tyrese is great. There's nothing wrong with Tyrese. But I didn't hate the trade at all.
No, I didn't.
People were just, like you said, were going in and out of it saying it was a terrible trade, gave away an asset.
It catered to the needs of both teams.
That's right. Exactly what I was about to say. What it ended up doing is getting a rim protector and a decent forward center in Sabonis, which is what they sorely needed. But what it really did was and you could see that when he ended up getting in the NBA all NBA team, it really spaced and got De'Aaron Fox free. And once he got his space and free, he excelled this whole year. He to me, I'm surprised he didn't get mentioned around that best most improved. Because he had one of his best seasons. He's had it in a very long time.
Yeah,
surprised he didn't get his name get thrown around for most improved, to be honest. Because he was great. He was great.
The big surprise, I think, out of this series, especially for Sacramento, was Malik Monk.
Yeah, I've always liked Malik Monk, but I agree.
Look, he was good for the Lakers last year.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe they let him go.
I don't think they could have afforded him, to be honest. I think there was an affordability thing, to be honest. Malik Monk is streaky player, streaky shooter, and a very good, we've talked about a few teams, that needed decent role players. He's definitely one that could command decent money as a role playing bench player.
Yeah. No, absolutely. This series, kind of went back and forth. Everybody was believing in Sacramento after the first two games in Sacramento. 2-0, and it's like, holy mackerel, look out, they're going to knock off. the Warriors, the Warriors answer back. And then all of a sudden, the series, it switches momentum. Everybody starts to lose on their home floor then. In the last three games of the series, the home team lost. So the series got turned on its head. In that game four, that thriller,
126-125 game. Yeah,
that's right. There was a Harrison Barnes three at the end to win it, and he misses. De'Aaron Fox breaks his left index finger. We know he's a left-hander. Yeah. How was that going to affect him in the next game? He had a splint on his finger in that game five. He still looked pretty good. But it just such a topsy-turvy end towards that series. If that three goes by Harrison Barnes, Sacramento's up 3-1. Going back to Sacramento, and that's a huge hole for Golden State to try and climb out of. But it goes back to Sacramento 2-2, and it's a mean. And then everybody then loses on their home on their own court.
Yeah, yeah.
It was crazy. We've seen Curry go nuclear in Game 7 with 50 points. It's unbelievable.
I think it was sort of every game except for probably Denver. All games in these entire series, I think home court advantage wasn't really a thing. Denver.
I don't think so.
I think every series, it didn't matter if you were home court or not. It never played a part. I mean, especially in this series. But that game four, like you said, I thought. On the back of Fox's 38 points, I really thought if they had that game, they had the series, but that's probably where their downfall, unfortunately, was.
Yeah, that's right. That's just the cliche of the intangibles and the championship DNA of Golden State, blah, blah, blah. Look, they did that. Both their stars, like Curry and Klay Thompson, even though Curry averaged nearly 34 points a game in that series, shooting percentage down a little bit. Same with Clay. Both of them sort of shot around the 35%, I think, from three, which is, sort of below their lofty standards, as the best backcourt shooting duo that the league's ever seen. But I guess it was enough to be able to get. And look, Sacramento, I think, will grow and get better from this. I think that was always going to be a bit of a, almost like a Memphis Grizzlies situation, a little bit of immaturity with a lot of players that have been there, haven't really got a whole lot of playoff experience. We know Harrison Barnes has got that, he's won a championship before with the Warriors. I think that's sort of their downfall a little bit there. A couple of youngsters there, Davion Mitchell and Keegan Murray, both super young but super talented. The future is good there. Kevin Huerter was a shrewd move in the offseason to sort of pick him from Atlanta. I thought he was a really good regular season player. He didn't really have the best series, averaged under 10 points. I think they could have used him a little bit better. But that slack, I guess, like I said, was picked up by Malik Monk. So yeah. That didn't really hurt them as much. But, you know, definitely I thought that Sabonis probably could have been a little bit more involved in this series.
Assertive, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think they sort of more went with, you know, we're going to live and die by De'Aaron Fox. And yeah. I think they could have used Sabonis's size against Golden State because, yeah, like I said, their only real size height-wise is Kevon Looney.
Yeah.
So if you can sort of beat him around the bush and do what you need to look at and look, let's not underestimate what Kevon Looney did in this series as well. Like, you know, he averaged like 15 rebounds a game. He had a couple of 20 rebound performances in this series. Yeah. So, you know, he's proven he's worth tenfold for this Warrior squad, but you know, they get the job done. And I thought it was the most impressive series of these playoffs. This is the only series that lived up to the hype.
Yeah, I think so. And like you said, I think the biggest downfall with Sacramento was if Sabonis sort of used his frame, his height, he only really averaged 11 points per game at the end. So it wasn't, to me, for who he is, he could have been a lot better.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's where playoff basketball can be won. It can be won in the trenches, in the paint.
That's right. Yeah, and you know, them going forward, I think they've got a very decent side, and I think they can run it back.
No, absolutely. All they'll be hoping on is improvement on. You know, I guess on those youngsters, you know, Keegan Murray, Davion Mitchell, I guess more progression of Sabonis and you know, can De'Aaron Fox continue, you know, on an upward trajectory.
They probably need a big coming off the bench, another big. I don't know.
They do. They've got Alex Len, but he's been kind of disappointing like his whole career. Yeah. So. To have somebody who's a little bit more productive, I would think that they need more of a stretch four, mm-hmm. really, because Sabonis will play the center, either that or go in there and get a true center, and then Sabonis can play.
Yeah, either or, just another decent big player they need coming off the bench, and like you said, either or, depending on which way they go.
You don't. I don't think they don't need to tinker very much roster wise. I think it's more. It's just an improvement
move, just a free agent move. I think that's all it is. And I think they leave it alone.
Improvement of young stars, and try and getting the most out of them on those rookie contracts while they can before they kind of have to pay, because I wouldn't think that they would be the most profitable organization around, even though they've got Shaq as one of their owners. But I wouldn't think they want to be diving too much into there. There's just certain teams out there that won't want to dive into the luxury tax, and I don't think they would be overexerting themselves, going, "Hey, you know, look at us, we're Sacramento, we're back." You know, I still think there's a lot of work to be done for them to be able to sustain the success long term.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, they got the crowd numbers back. Everyone was that.
Brand new arena. It's only a couple of years old.
The gimmick of that, like the beam, seemed to play on for everybody. They loved it. It was just a thing. But
oh man, that was huge. These players, that was huge. These players, like the beam.
That's what's something you need. The Warriors move on. They'll play the Lakers in round two. So the last game of the round one was the 4-5 Phoenix Suns beating the LA Clippers in the series 4-1. Now. Without going into talking about Clippers too much, I found it telling that their best player in this series was probably Russell Westbrook.
Oh, hands down. Look, they steal game one, and I thought, wow, like here we go. Like this could be a real topsy-turvy type series as well. And you're like, all right, well, here we go. Like, you know, Kawhi Leonard was big in that game one.
Well, he smashed it, 38
right,
points.
Yeah, he exploded. He had just a telling moment in that game. He had like back to back threes on back to back possessions. It sort of extended the Clippers' lead out to about 8, I think it was. They get back to what, 5? I think it ended up being 5 points the difference. But the biggest play, in that game was right at the end of it, where Devin Booker's shot gets blocked by Russell Westbrook at the end.
Yeah.
And that's just a testament to, to Westbrook, his effort. No, nobody's ever going to question Russ's effort or anything of that. He's kind of the last generation of, generation last of a player with reckless abandonment. Like we talk about Ja Morant, like him downhill down the court is freaking scary.
Yeah.
But now, especially over the last couple of years, his downhill has been a little reckless and very ugly to watch. Like it's very turnover prone style of play. So there's going to have to be a point in his career coming up very shortly where he's going to have to rein that back in.
I think so. I agree. I think so.
Players are going to evolve when Father Time starts to catch up. If you want to keep playing in the league and you want to be as inefficient as what he is, and he has shown over the last couple of years that he has been very inefficient, then something's got to change.
He just needs to adapt with the team that he's got, not just play the same game over and over, because it doesn't work clearly on every team. And that was extremely evident at the Lakers.
Well, that's right. Very poor fit.
Yeah, of course.
With the Lakers. That was just sort of LeBron flexing the muscles a little bit, going, hey, I want this guy, let's go get him. And then you sort of realize when you actually, start running around on the court together and you start to get a little bit of chemistry and then things start not going the way that you sort of seen, you're like, okay, maybe this wasn't such a good idea and I have instant buyer's regret. But them's the breaks. But I thought the Clippers had a genuine chance in this series after game one. As soon as Kawhi Leonard goes down, there's no Paul George in this series. It was, I guess, signed, sealed, delivered that Phoenix were going to win.
I think so. I think once he went down, obviously there was no Paul George pretty much in this series. It was pretty much that writing on the wall. And Phoenix did sort of cruise away pretty convincingly towards the end.
No, at least.
They never sort of look like losing each of those games, especially after game.
Game three, the Clippers were tried. So Russ had 30. I think Norman Powell had 40. He had 42. And they got pipped at the post. Like they just showed that little bit of fight, and you're like, oh man, can they pull this one, out of the fire at home in LA? And it just, they're just too much firepower.
And that's what I mean.
Game by Devin Booker. Devin Booker had 45 points. He averaged over 37 in this series. So it was the Devin Booker show really for Phoenix. I thought Kevin Durant was a little bit of an afterthought in this series for Phoenix. I think this series is all about Devin Booker and him sort of, asserting his authority over the playoffs. And it got worse as it went on. Again, the Clippers in game five were so close. They were right there. They have back-to-back turnovers in the final minute. And they ended up losing by like 6 at the end, just a bit of a free throw-a-thon towards the end of that game. They had to play the foul game. I think they were within 4 or 3, I think, within that final minute. Back-to-back turnovers, game killer.
But it was also another massive Devin Booker game again. So
Oh, well, yeah, just a quiet, yeah, what was it, just a quiet, what did he 47? Have, a quiet 50 piece?
Yeah. So that obviously knocks the Clippers out. What do they do going forward? They're the only team that I can't work out.
Steve Ballmer, he's got to make a decision. Blow it up. Run it back with one of them. Try and get. You can't have two superstars, because that's what these two are, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, two superstars that are as hurt as much as these two. Okay, so here's a few things to sort of think about and ponder. Just this season, the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, 11-20. So not great. Since these two paired up in 2009, in the 19-20 season, out of a possible 347 games, they played 142 together. This year, only played 38 games together. You know, PG missed 31 games, Kawhi Leonard 33 games. I think this experiment's done.
I think it's done, but my biggest concern is that I don't think
what do you get? What do you get? That's the thing. When if you're going to put two of them, I don't think they're going to get rid of Kawhi Leonard. So to me, Paul George's head's on the chopping block. What do you get for him?
When
you can only get 50 games a season out of him.
Firstly, they're one of the teams that are in that very high tax bracket for the payroll. So they need to work that out. I think what do you get? Well, firstly, you're right. I think they keep Kawhi Leonard because they are moving to a new stadium and they're going to want to have some sort of marquee there, regardless of what you think of Kawhi Leonard. He's probably still a marquee player when he's on.
Look, he is, but this load management and it's exhausting now. It really is. I can't deal with it. You know, I'd hate to be a Clippers fan. I can't deal with it.
I think they need to get rid of Paul. So, because I did a little bit of digging, because I just couldn't work out what to do with it. They probably will keep Kawhi. I agree.
The thing is, they've got good depth, but that depth gets stretched so much when your two superstars are not healthy.
If they're going to get rid of Paul George, are they going to do it this offseason or before the end of deadline? Because this season coming, he'll owe $45 million. Next year he has a player option for $48.8 million.
Oof.
So in other words, no doubt in my mind, if he's still on that team by the end of next season, he's going to take up that player option. No doubt in my mind.
If there's no incentives there, or for you have to play a certain amount of games or anything of that, it'd be like, oh yeah, sign me up for 48 mil.
You know where a good team would be for Paul George, but then I can't work out what they would get back, just because of how he will play well with this player, and that would be the Knicks. Him and Brunson could be pretty good together, I think. What they get back, they could get back an RJ Barrett. It'd be a lot more. I know, but I'm just saying, like, you know, could get an RJ Barrett because of his youth and you know, sort of starting again. And they could, you know,
I think the Clippers would have to throw something in with that. If I was the Knicks, I would not be going straight up for that, because RJ Barrett plays every game and Paul George doesn't.
I'm telling you now, it's going to be the other way. I don't know if it's going to happen. I'm just saying, I think the Knicks would have to give up more, even just to match salaries alone. They would have to give up more.
Oh no, that's the part of it. And that's absolutely why I wouldn't do it. That it would be. You'd want to be, you know, comparable stars. No. When you're not playing, you can't be trusted.
before we finish on this round one, that's interesting. So you think, do you like RJ Barrett?
I think he has potential. He hasn't really showed it yet. Look, there's you don't go to Duke University and be a highly touted recruit like that for nothing. There's clearly talent there. And look, there's been flops that have come out of big name universities.
You don't think he's had enough time to show it? I think he's had enough time and he hasn't shown enough. I'm not saying he's terrible, but I'm not saying I don't think he was that number three pick that everyone was going on about personally.
Well, he was just the best of the bad. Well, not the bad situation, but he was the best pick available, you know, for the Knicks in that draft.
And that's what I'm getting at. You're right, but everyone was going, we were happy. Like, obviously, they wanted Zion, but we were happy that RJ fell to three and blah 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 blah. I don't see him fitting in that squad, and he just needs a reset. That's all I'm saying. He could be at that potential. I just don't think it's on the Knicks anymore. Personally,
I mean,
So you think there's something there, but
absolutely. I think there's something there, but I think they just not so much need to continue to run it back, but it's I think you would, if you were the Knicks, I would rather bank on. Yeah, not so much a superstar jump, but I still think the potential's there. You know, as a player, like there's things that he can improve on. Of course there is, but that's the part of it. And I'll just go back to, you know, just looking up statistics now. He played 7 years. He was hurt in his rookie season, but every year since then, he's played 70-plus games. Everybody knows that nobody plays 82 games anymore unless your name's Mikal Bridges. So that's just the way it is. But, you know, you've just got to – they're such a frustrating – team, like, you know, the Knicks will always chase the superstar, and whether they get the superstar or not, that's another story.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you could see someone like a Paul George going there, and or any super sort of superstar. I know the one big superstar they want, and I kept hearing this rumor. I'll talk about it around two. There's one particular superstar that team's dying for, but we'll talk about that around two.
They're crying out, you know, and just having a look at this too, like PG's 33.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't the youngest guy getting around. Okay, so let's just go comparable seasons. RJ Barrett compared to PG. So, like I said, 70 plus games the last three seasons, 56 games in his last season, in his rookie season. So that's basically since this has been Paul George at the Clippers since 2019, 2020. 48 games, 54 games, 31 games, and 56 games. That's not for me.
Yeah.
And I've got a real soft spot for the Knicks, and that's why I'm barking back at this. That's not for me.
No, I get it, but then I said they did re-sign Barrett, and it wasn't like a big, like, they didn't have to spend a lot of money, which is kind of good. So okay, so it's possible.
Look, here's Paul George's two most productive seasons were the two that he had in OKC.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right.
27 and 28 points per game. He was phenomenal. He played 79 in 77 games. And then since he's gone to LA, he can't stay healthy.
It was getting off to what we were saying. I don't know what they do with what the Clippers do. The Clippers have to sort of finish this experiment.
For me, the experiment's over. I'd have to sit down and think more on what, you know, that this potentially could look like, because, like I said, that they're not getting rid of Kawhi Leonard. So
and they finished.
They unloaded assets, and that's the thing. This is a Rudy Gobert situation. They unloaded all of their future assets to obtain Paul George from OKC.
Yeah, that's right. But and we're not going all in on them because they finished fifth, so they did do okay in 44-38.
So they have exactly, and that's purely because of their depth.
Correct.
They don't have that. If they don't have that depth, they're a bottom feeder.
That's right.
They're in the play-in. Right. Have a look at last year. They were the eighth seed, just scraped into the playoffs, and then they end up getting bounced by you know, a streaking 10 seed New Orleans Pelicans that pop themselves into the playoffs last year. Like that's a hugely disappointing season for them. And then this year, again, their superstars aren't healthy. They eke out 44 wins, but yet their season dies off like this because their superstars aren't healthy.
I just don't know what they it has to be Paul George. I just don't know what they're going to get or where he's going to go and what they're going to get in return.
We contradict ourselves when we're talking about Gobert and they're not going to get rid of him because all the assets that they gave up for it. But PG now, this is his fourth season in LA. So, you know, some of those assets have already gone to OKC. So I can see it as a different situation, even though it's still the same. It was a four first rounders. It was just an unloading of assets. So that's a very confusing team at the moment. But they will be trying to do everything they can, you know, to try and compete with the Lakers in LA.
Yeah. They're going to have to. I'm just playing with a trade machine now, just to make the wages equal to what Paul George is going to get next year. They'd have to RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, and Evan Fournier just to match the wages.
They can have Evan Fournier, but I wouldn't be getting rid of the other two.
How much Paul George owe next year. So
yeah,
that concludes the first round for each NBA team. I think we've decided that we're going to move straight on to the second round, correct?
No, we'll have it. Let's
have a break. All right.
Let's keep everybody in suspense for a little bit, and then they can click on the next. They can click on the next pod. So,
well, I suppose you don't want to listen to a 2.5-hour pod because that's where we're going if we.
Nobody's doing that. No, we'll let everybody have a bit of a break. I wouldn't want to listen to us jibber jabber on for too long at one period of time anyway. So, I thought we covered everything that we really needed to for this first round. You know, playoff basketball's here. We're weeding out the bad and keeping the good. So that's what the playoffs are all about. And you know, we get into round two, into the conference semifinals, some good matchups, some really good matchups.
Well, we won't sign off because we're going to go straight onto it ourselves. So we'll just say, yeah, this is part one. We'll meet you in round two, part two, and we'll see you all then. Straight after this one.
Right after this. So get that button clicking.